clicking back to Texas real quick. Ronnie and I do a 24-hour Christmas special every year. I get the feeling your mom, does she still live in Dallas? Is that
no? She passed away.
Oh, did she? I'm sorry.
Yeah, about well, she had a good long life. She made it to 86, and she lived in my hometown where I was born and where she was born. She lived there till the day she died.
Well, did
and,
y'all have kind of a traditional type Christmas? Is what I was getting at.
I went home every year as long as she was alive. I went home for Christmas and usually for Thanksgiving as well. Sometimes in the later years after I had kids, we brought her to Dallas. We'd have some of the local townsfolk would drive her out there. She could drive in that small town, but she didn't want to drive in Dallas, so they'd drive her out there, and we'd have Christmas together. And I maintained very close ties with her. My dad passed away back in 72, but she died in 2003, and I called her every Sunday, and she kept up. She kept a scrapbook. You know, and strangers would show up at her door, and she'd invite them in. And I kept saying, "Mom, you don't know these people. Well, they love you so much." And I said, "Yeah, I know, but you don't need to invite them in."
That's funny.
I sent her all the gold records and platinum records and Grammys, and they're still. I kept her house after she died. We go down there. I'm still deeply involved in my hometown, and we're trying to restore the courthouse. And we have the oldest working courthouse in Texas. It goes back to before the Civil War. And I bought several of the buildings around the square, and we're going to restore those. And
great.
And my friend Bowden lives down there and runs that music theater. You remember Pinkerton Bowden?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Richard?
Well, I grew up with Richard.
Lord.
Richard got me into the music.
Did he really?
It's his fault. Yeah.
You're kidding.
No.
That is funny.
He's probably my best friend.
What a bird. Well, tell him I said, "Hey, man, I love Richard. I hadn't talked to him in so long." My Basset Hound's actually on his and Sandy's first album on the cover.
Really? Is that your dog? Good Lord.
Absolutely. That's funny.
So he moved home from Nashville a few years ago to take care of his mother. Turned the old American Legion Hall into a music venue, and we've had, you know, I've played there, and Jackson's played there.
Good for you. That's great.
And some country music stars have played there. So, yeah, we go back there quite often, and my Grammys and platinum records are still on the wall in my mother's house. And we you know, my kids stay there, and we maintain very close ties to the hometown.
That is cool. I remember my Aunt Caddy was the last old person I took care of. Mm-hmm. And I gave her all my, she always wanted to see my videos. They never played them enough for her.
Yeah.
You know? So
yeah.
I got them on a reel, got her a player, not a recorder, so she wouldn't screw up.
And right.
We were on the Ralph Emery show one night where people could call in. They put a 1-800 number up to ask us questions. Well, every time she would play that tape, she would call me. I'm calling the number and you're not answering. They never answer. I go, "Well, it's a tape, Aunt Cat." She goes, "I know it's a tape. I put it in there. Well, why won't y'all answer the telephone?" You know.
But yeah, my mother, bless her heart, you know, wasn't really famous until, and a lot of them were like that. You weren't famous until they saw you on TV. Didn't matter how many records you'd sold.
Right.
You know, until they saw you on the TV.
And y'all wouldn't do TV.
No, so she didn't see us on the TV much, but it finally started to sink in after a few, you know, TV appearances and Grammys and stuff like that. But it took a, I mean, she asked me if I needed any money until I was about 35. If I was getting enough to eat and, you know, stuff like that. With moms,
bless your heart.
Yeah.
Did she give you a guitar or something? Because I saw you play guitar when you were doing your solo project.
Yeah.
You played here at the Opry House, and you're a good guitar player. Did
no.
they give you drums? Or
I'm not a good guitar player.
Well, you can play. You
I can play chords.
Yeah.
Play chords. Yeah. Well, my first instrument was a ukulele.
Me too.
Yeah.
So
George Harrison. A lot of kids started on that, and I just bought all my kids ukulele, so we all sit around, do songs together because their little fingers will reach around the neck. But at some point, again, it was Bowden. I started in the high school marching band. I played trombone, and I wasn't very good at that because I had missed beginning band because I tried to play football my first year, so I didn't get beginner band. So I just was self-taught on the trombone, and I wasn't that good at it. But I used to beat on books with pencils all the time. You remember those paper book covers they had with Reddy Kilowatt on there and all
right.
that stuff? They had that little airspace between the paper cover and the book, and it made this great puffy sound. And so at some point, Bowden or one of my classmates said, "Why don't you try playing drums? Because you're driving us all crazy, beating on the dashboard and books and stuff." So I put together a makeshift kit out of some old drums that I found in the band hall, and I started playing those in Bowden's combo, and then I played drums in the marching band. And then when I, after about a year or two of that, my mother decided that I was good enough, and she snuck me off to a music store in Paris, Texas. I'm sorry, Sulphur Springs, Texas. The guy owned a store. He had a music store in Paris, Texas, and a music store in Sulphur Springs. And we went to Sulphur Springs and got me a Red Sparkle set of drums. And she didn't tell my dad until she'd already done it. And then on the way home, she stopped by his auto parts store. That's what my dad did. He was a farmer, too. And she showed him the drums, and he was cool with it. They both, I have to say, my parents were extraordinary. They never discouraged me. They never gave me a hard time about my hair. They just knew that I was pretty good at it, and I was making some money. I helped put myself through college, and they both loved music. My mother played piano, and my dad kind of sang bass in a barbershop kind of way. Always had a record player in the house and big band recordings and stuff like that, and they really encouraged me. And Bowden's parents were very involved with our band, and we'd have dances at the Legion Hall every weekend, and kids would come from 100 miles away, you know, and it just started small like that. We'd played clubs and frat parties and debutante parties and, you know, the Elks Lodge and the Masons and the all those, you know,
yeah,
the Knights
right.
of Columbus and, you know, all that small town stuff around Texas and Oklahoma and Louisiana and Arkansas. I have to give my parents a lot of credit, you know, for the support.
Me too. I always just said, if you're going to be one, be a good one.
Yeah. Yeah. And everybody else's parents were yelling at them about, you know, why don't you get a real job? But my parents and Bowden's parents and a couple of the other guys in the group, I mean, this was before the Eagles, mind you,
right.
but they were very supportive.
That's cool.
So I count myself lucky for that.
We get asked this question. It's tough. But do you have a favorite Eagles song? Is there one on the set list you look forward to popping up there?
Well, my favorite ones are the ones that are new that we're going to get to play now. I mean, of course, there are the way Glenn answers that question, he says, well, they're not favorites, but they're benchmarks. You know, they're milestones. And they're the obvious ones, you know, like Desperado and Hotel California and Lion Eyes. And it's the obvious stuff. There are no hidden secret favorite songs or anything like that.
Well, thanks for all the music, man, and the inspiration.
And thank you. You know, you boys have done all right. You know,
well, we have, but we give you credit about every other interview.
Well,
when we get a chance to, when they say list them, you're always up there at the top because you really did cut your own road. And I know we've all had influences, but you sure found an original way of doing your thing.
Well, you're very kind.
Still
I appreciate that.
Man,
appreciate that.
Thanks a lot for coming by. Real quick, Walden Pond, of course, was the recipient to the tribute album we did. Are you still involved in Walden Pond?
Yes, sir.
Yeah?
This is I founded that. It's a nonprofit I have. This is our 17th year. We just had a big fundraiser in New York City.
Fantastic.
And I guess I'll be doing it till the day I die, and hopefully my children will take
it
over.
And how is it? What have you seen in terms of the area?
Well, we've raised about $38 million in the past 17 years. My group, along with two or three of the other local groups, we've been able to preserve about 85 to 87% of it. It's 2,680 acres. And we're still buying land, and now we're in the education business, too. I mean, I keep yelling at my executive director. She keeps expanding the project. And I keep saying, will you just please stop? It costs us $1.2 million a year just to run the thing. And we're doing okay, though. People have been very generous to us. And it's just something I work on all the time. You know,
that's great.
It's enriched my life spiritually and mentally. And I've met a lot of incredible people. And I just think it's important. I think it's an American treasure. A national treasure, just like Gettysburg and Yosemite and Yellowstone and some of that stuff. So we're in the business of saving that and educating young kids and teachers and kids from other countries. Now we're in that business, and so it's been a real education for me.
It's fantastic. Don, thanks for your time, man.
Thank you.
They're wearing you out here in Nashville. So great to have you all in town, and thanks for taking a minute.
You're welcome. I like it here. I'm thinking about joining the group of people who have bought themselves.
Come on, we'd love to have
a place here. Yeah,
it's a good place to live. I've been here 26 years now, and raised both my kids are in college. But it's been a great place to raise a family, it's enough of a city now. We've actually got pro football and stuff, but it's still got that small town. It really is the last of Tin Pan Alley. Just so many great songwriters. Any day you can call up whoever you want and sit down and try and make something up. That's the part I love the most.
That's what I said this morning. I think most of the good songwriting that's going on in this country now is going on right here.
There's some great writers in this town for sure.
And I just may join you.
Come on.
All right.
We love it.
You got meat and three.
We can always go back to Texas and Louisiana.
Yeah. If you got barbecue, you know, and
plenty of it.
And meat and threes.
Now, it's a little different, you know. When I first got here and ordered barbecue, being from Louisiana, I'm used to rolling my sleeves up, you know, and needing a whole roll of paper towels to get done with a plate of barbecue or barbecue sandwich. And they put this pulled pork on a dry bun, and I'm like, where's the barbecue sauce?
Yeah, give me some sauce.
Well, there's some of that vinegar stuff over there. Yeah. Like, no, we need to talk about this. Yeah. But y'all got a good start anyway. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, it's a different thing.
We can help
thing.
Them, see?
Yeah, we can. We can.
Give them a little cuppers.
That's right.
That's right.
You put this on there. It's supposed to drip.
Oh, thanks, man.
Thank you. It's good to talk to you.